Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week we're looking ahead to the 38th annual Tennessee Williams and New Orleans Literary Festival with three festival presidents, Lawrence Henry Gobble, present festival president, and past presidents Peggy Scott Laborde and Errol Laborde. This week brings the 38th annual Tennessee Williams and New Orleans Literary Festival, and we thought we'd check in with President Lawrence Henry Gobble to see how plans are coming along. Now, Lawrence, I wonder if you would tell me what you remember about the first festival you went to.
The first festival I went to, I was tricked.
Oh.
It was the lovely executive director at the time and current executive director, Paul Willis. He and I were visiting, and he said, you know, you seem very interested in a lot of different things, and we're having this event and this little dinner with Diane Ladd and Brenda Kern and a couple other people. Would you like to come join us? Like, yeah. What a wonderful thing it was. It was pretty magical. And he hooked me by showing me that just by being present with people who have these amazing minds, you can really connect in a way that is not found any other way. You can find so much in watching a movie or reading a book, but when you're actually with the people who have shared these amazing stories and have a way of being with it, and then get to just meet them as human beings, it's pretty incredible.
Everyone who works on the festival has such an emotional connection to his work. You know, how did you first experience him? What does his work mean to you?
This is going to be interesting because it's not what I think most people would say, but I would say his work's heartbreaking. And it's usually pretty hard for me to watch because it is a look behind the curtain of real life of what it is to struggle to be human. And there is hope in it and there's joy, but there's also death and loss of oneself and their mental torment. And yet it's so real, you can't look away. I'm really amazed by his ability to do that. And I would say what really draws me to him is, and where I really connect with Tennessee, is his love of New Orleans.
Oh, yeah.
And his connection to the bohemian life, the life behind the curtain, you know, the people who are hanging out, just being with each other, not the ones on stage, not the ones with the money, but sometimes the one on stage and with the money with everybody else, not when the airs all get dropped and we just get to enjoy life and dance and be in a parade and sing and smoke and drink and all the things.
Talk about Saints and Sinners, too, as an outgrowth of the Tennessee Williams Festival.
Saints and Sinners is another just phenomenal aspect of something that might be and has, you know, started as this really nice program to do something to acknowledge LGBTQ writers and creators, but also bring some awareness to HIV and the heartbreak that whole pandemic brought to the world, but also to the gay community. And then it started just really taking off and people finding their voice and finding that they could be acknowledged in a way that they might get lost somewhere else. It has just become something that people just are drawn to. And again, the stories of the people. The thing I love about it is that I can show up at a Saints and Sinners event and meet someone I would never interact with in my everyday life, but connect with them immediately. And mm-hmm. whether that be this gorgeous Black woman whose poetry will knock you off your feet, or this elderly man that wears a seersucker suit and looks through a monocle, and yet I feel like I'm part of them when I'm at Saints and Sinners.
We're starting off a little earlier this year with the Stella Shouting Contest on Sunday.
Yes, yes. This is something I'm so excited about because we did it last year for the first time and we found that it really did work. And first of all, we wanted to address everything I've been talking about, the, you know, this real life, visceral connection with life, with the process or the journey of life that Tennessee writes about can be very traumatic. And just like the Stella, the famous Stella is about, you know, I didn't mean to hit you that hard. Can you come back home? Like, it's about, you know, abuse. And most people don't know that or don't remember that because they just love the Stella, Marlon Brando's famous thing. And another thing I'm really glad we're doing now is we're really committed to giving back to the community. So we started last year with a fundraiser for the New Orleans Family Justice Center for Family Crisis. And we raise money around the Stella Shout for that. And this year, we're actually adding in awareness for the 988 number. They took that long 800 suicide prevention and mental crisis number and made it 988. So you just dial 988 and you're talking to somebody who will help you through whatever you're going through. And so excited to have that part of the festival along with the, you know, the awareness of the Family Justice Center and yet still have a great time screaming Stella in every way possible. And,
right.
And we have these amazing celebrities showing up for it. We have, our, of course, our beautiful local TV Broadway star, Leslie Castay. She's going to be up on the balcony, and Brian Bath's going to host us. And we have the gorgeous Alexandra Daddario, who's a celebrity judge from both White Lotus and Mayfair Witches. So
oh,
pretty,
what fun.
Pretty exciting Sunday, yeah.
Well, keep up the good work, Lawrence. We all appreciate everything you do.
Thank you so much, and thank you so much for having me on.
We've been talking with Lawrence Henry Gobble, who is the president of the Tennessee Williams and New Orleans Literary Festival. Lawrence, see you out there on the streets.
Wonderful. Thanks, Susan.
Thank you. It is such a pleasure to welcome Peggy Scott Labord to The Reading Life. Peggy is the host of that long-running arts and culture show on WYES, Steppin' Out, and she's also an acclaimed documentarian and author. She's written or covered such wide-ranging topics as Mardi Gras, New Orleans neighborhoods, our lost restaurants, the fairgrounds, Canal Street, and Christmas in New Orleans, to name only a few. Now she's back with a new documentary, Literary New Orleans. Now, it seems inevitable to me that you would do this documentary with all your ties to the literary community. You were one of the founders and a former president of the Tennessee Williams New Orleans Literary Festival. You've read as many New Orleans books as I've read, I think, and written many more. So well, talk about the genesis for this documentary.
Well, you know, I think it was sort of in the meant-to-be category because over the years I would be buying books. What a concept, right? Picking up books that I thought, well, gee, this, you know, this would add to my knowledge. I'm just interested in it and all. And I really think back, especially the last few years, about I think it was going to evolve to that. But I wouldn't say there was any kind of five-year plan,
right.
Just because, as you said, my interests being involved with the Tennessee Williams Festival, which we're so blessed to have, and getting to know writers just from around the New Orleans area, you know, I think it was something that was going to happen, and I'm so glad that through WYS we're able to do it.
Well, it's such a huge subject, so enlighten us a bit about your process. How do you... How do you squeeze it into
60 minutes? You know that thing about you don't want to watch sausage being made? Or andouille, I guess we can localize it even more, right? Or boudin. But yeah, the process, that was, you know, to quote wonderful actress Becky Allen, it was hard, okay? Because, yeah, you know, it's an hour documentary. So that sounds like a long time, but you'd be amazed,
really,
you know,
not.
You know, over 300 years of history in our most historic of cities. So yeah, it was difficult. Like what stays, what goes. And you just say, well, this is the best I can do. Now, one of the things though that I did do is we purposely start off pretty much like the first 24 minutes with identifying, you know, what we would deem, and which I love when I was rereading your book lover's guidebook, that you agreed, what are the four most important novels, you know, or authors, I should say. And indeed, so the big focus for the first part of the show, because it's kind of in chapters, if you will, no pun intended, but, you know, Tennessee Williams, Anne Rice, Walker Percy, and Thelma / and John Kennedy Toole, because we got to give her
the whole story.
Right? Yes. And that whole saga, because I'm very blessed, it really, part of the focus on that is how it came to be after poor Mr. Toole committed suicide, the manuscript and how it got published as a book. What a saga. And you may think you know the details on that, but there's more, because we have it from different perspectives. Kenneth Holditch, who was very pivotal to this. Walter Isaacson, of course, Walker Percy. The different aspects of that and their views of what it took to have this happen. Fascinating.
So tell us about some of the other writers that you've talked to for this.
Oh, my goodness. Maurice Carlos Robbins, what a delight he is.
Yes.
I mean, just, you know, what a sweetheart talking to him, as we said, you know, Doug Brinkley, you know, as a matter of fact, I have my list because thankfully it's pretty long. The whole concept of being able to sit down with them, Kalama Yassalam, there is a tribute to Tom Dent, the writer Tom Dent. As I said, T.R., Walter Isaacson is very prominent in it. Ryan Fertel. Ryan's, I think it was his dissertation, either master's thesis or dissertation, and, you know, of course, he's a very talented writer and he's at Tulane, but was about the 19th century, what was termed Creole writers.
Mm-hmm.
And so he really sheds light on that. Nancy Dixon from Dillard. Very much. And Edwin Blair, who was there at the time at the birth of Lou John Press and was a friend of the Webbs, who are very much the masterminds. So it's a nice overview, I think.
Well, one of the great things about Nancy is that she is like a walking file cabinet of information.
She sure is.
And she did that marvelous anthology, N.O. Lit.
Which is about 3 inches thick, by the way.
And very heavy, but so worth it.
So much work. Oh, yeah. No, I really admire that.
And that was the book she needed to teach.
And let me tell you, that certainly was a resource in this program.
Oh, it's a fabulous book. And she also edited the tricentennial volume for the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities. So we have all these people who work so tirelessly to keep this heritage going.
One thing that I love that you especially point out, too, is we're so lucky to have great bookshops.
We are.
You know, I mean, between
they
Garden District, Octavia. Yeah. Yes, they do. They do. I mean, we have many, and we're so blessed. And, you know, newer to the scene would be Baldwin, you know, but you've got the community bookstore. I mean, the list is long. You know, Barnes & Noble's out there, too. And, you know, it's just, but we really are blessed. Books matter, Susan, as you well know.
Yeah.
Here. Yes.
And we're lucky to have festivals. So talk a little bit about how they pop up in this documentary.
Yes, they do. Well, of course, you know, to quote you, the granddaddy of them all, I'm so proud to say, and because of our mutual involvement, is the Tennessee Williams New Orleans Literary
well,
Festival.
Well, tell the origin story.
Well, there were a group of people, and it was, you know, a lawyer, a teacher, someone involved, Beverly Gianna with the Tourist Commission, and my husband, Errol LaBorde. You know, it was quite a coming together. And Don Marsha was asked to be there. And Don was at the head of La Petite at the time. But it was a lunch on a Halloween day in 1986 at Mandina's. And some core people, I was not there, but some core people were there and said, let's do this. And it was kind of, we don't have much money. And eventually, George Herkert was involved. And mm-hmm. so was Julian Mutter, you know, and George DeVille. The list, you know, the list is long, but coming together and not worrying about the fact that we didn't have much money, but we did have the resources, thankfully, of La Petite, because Don, when he was approached about this, it turns out they were doing Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
Couldn't be better.
And of course, you know, what better person to name the festival? And may I just point out, though, wearing my Tennessee Williams Festival hat here, though, the festival is not just Tennessee Williams. Of course,
right.
It's at the core. And there's a scholars conference on the side, too. But it's about just fine writing words, you know, the words. So it's not just about that. It's very local as well. But we have lots of national authors, too.
And it's fun.
It's not snooty. It does not this is always very important. It doesn't presuppose that you read the book, you know, but people are not, they're not reading papers. I mean, the Scholars Conference, sure. But in terms of panels, you have to have a conversation. You're in a panel. You need to be ready to converse. It is not snooty. And like Stanley and Stella, our shouting contest, that's not snooty either.
Well, the great thing is that it gives people a chance to walk right up to an author they admire.
Yes, it's very accessible.
And talk to them. That's one of the things I love the most
about it. We also like, you know, a little Sazeracs or mint juleps, too, on occasion.
There is the Carousel Bar at the hotel.
At the Mont Lyon, our base. Yes, indeed.
Another literary landmark.
Yes, the Mont Lyon. And that actually very much figures into the show because it's true. Tennessee Williams and Truman Capote. But the list is long.
We've been talking with Peggy Scott Laborde, past president of the Tennessee Williams and New Orleans Literary Festival, whose new film documentary is Literary New Orleans. We'll be right back. Earl Laborde has had a long and distinguished career in journalism, writing about his beloved hometown of New Orleans right from grad school, where he did his dissertation on the economic impact of Mardi Gras. He's been an editor for Renaissance Publishing, and he's the producer of Informed Sources, and he is the author of many, many books, including I Never Danced with an Eggplant on a Streetcar Before, The Buzzard Wore a Tutu, March the Day God, A History of the Rex Organization, Crew, The Early History of Carnival from Comus to Zulu, and many others. And now he's back with a new collection of his columns, When Rex Meant Zulu, and Other Chronicles of the New Orleans Experience. Earl, my friend, how are you?
Fine. Good to be here. Thank you.
I'm glad you're here. I'm thinking here of the Lundy Gras writing you have in this book, because you were a participant in that part of our city's history.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about that.
For Lundy Gras, not only was I there for the Big Bang, I created the Big Bang.
Right.
Yeah.
That and the big hat to go with it.
Yeah. That's right. That would have been in I think, 1986. Two things happened. The Mardi Gras before, that Monday night, it was always kind of a dead night, and there wasn't much activity going on in downtown New Orleans. And I was downtown with some friends near Gallia Hall, and the Proteus Parade was passing by. And I knew the guy who was captain. We were kind of friends, and it was raining. It was drizzling. As he passed, he saw me, and he says, Earl, there's nobody out here, man. This is really sad. There's no crowd. And I was thinking, here's this traditional old parade. Here's this guy who works all year for parade, and there's nobody there. And said, we need to create something for that night before.
Yeah.
So the idea started thinking, and so I knew Riverwalk had just come into existence, and I knew Riverwalk had a real urban commitment, that they liked doing things, that, you know, in part with the community. And I knew the woman, Carol Lynch, who was a PR person. So I explained to her. I also knew that there used to be a tradition of Rex arriving by river on the day before Carnival. And so I said, if I could get Rex to agree to start arriving again by river, do you think you get Riverwalk to kind of host this? Could they have a stage right there and have a little ceremony and all of this? And she said, well, how much would this cost? I said, nothing. I mean, we just all kind of just get in and do it. And she says, well, let me check. And she called me back and said, okay, we'll do it. So I talked to Rex people, and they said, yeah, I think we should do it again. So under one condition, though, we need to use a Coast Guard cutter. We can't use a commercial ship, but as long as we're doing a Coast Guard cutter, that could be like the official rep ship. I said, fine. He said, the other thing is, I don't want to step on Proteus's toes because it's their night. And I said, well, I don't think Proteus is going to care, because anyway, so I talked to the guy from Proteus. He said, yeah, I'd love to have that because it could bring more people down.
Yeah.
Okay. And so all those things just kind of came together. It was like those little movies, you know, Mickey Rooney. And, you know,
put it on a show.
Yeah, let's put on a show. And everybody was willing to cooperate. So the first year we did it, I remember standing there, and I remember seeing the Coast Guard cutter with Rex pulling up. And all of a sudden, Rex is coming out. And Riverwalk has his own jazz band, so we had band built in. And I see Rex coming. And they created a new costume for him. It was like a nautical, sort of king's costume mm-hmm. that hadn't been worn before. And I thought that was just really, really fun. And the crowd loved it, you know. And I said, this is something, you know, we could build on. And we did.
This isn't in the book, but tell the story of starting the Tennessee Williams Festival, because you were the founder, you were the first president. That's one of those stories of possibility in New Orleans.
Yeah, there had been one year a book festival in New Orleans, not to be confusing one now. I'm not sure who did it. And I remember going, and there were just all kind of vendors there with books. And, you know, it was nice when they thought. But anyway, I had lunch one day with Beverly Gianna, who worked with the tourist convention. She says, Errol, said, why don't we start a book festival? So I said, well, okay. So we did. And we started passing the word around some people. You know, we're trying to start a book festival. And so we had this meeting, and one of the people was Don Marshall from Le Petit. And what had happened is that there had been some kind of event at Le Petit, and Don Marshall was creating all kind of stuff. And they were staging Cow in the Hot Tin Roof. And they had a party in conjunction with it. And we were thinking, well, man, if you're doing Cow in the Hot Tin Roof, what if there was a festival linked to Tennessee Williams? And we really hadn't thought about it, but he says, you know, maybe we could do like an annual festival. You could do an annual Tennessee Williams play. And he said, yeah, okay. So he was at that meeting, and a couple of other people, somebody from City Hall, a guy named John Jardell from the state, and just a few people. We all got together. It was on Halloween afternoon that year at Mandina's. And so it was over Mandina's, and it just all kind of came together real quick. Let's do it. Here's the date. We can do this. We can do that. And I look back at it. I realize I forgot to eat. I mean, it was just so much stuff that happened. And so that would have been in October. And then that March, we had the first festival. And, you know, when you do things, New Orleans was coming out of sort of a hard time financially. There was the oil industry. And so people were willing to do stuff, right? American Airlines had just come into town. And I think Beverly got American Airlines to donate flights. And then the hotels were willing to donate some rooms. Le Petit was donated its theater space. So there's a lot of that kind of stuff that went on. And we pulled it together. David Cuthbert, who I know used to be a colleague at the Picayune.
A theater critic.
Knew a guy. And in his heart, he was a theater producer from Los Angeles who did a one-man show called Confessions of a Nightingale, which was like a Tennessee Williams one-man show. He says, I can see about bringing this guy in. You know, I'll produce it, and we'll have a one-man show. So he said, he got him, all right? And then word got out, and people knew it, and people within the Tennessee Williams community, hey, I was an old friend of Tennessee. You know, I'd like to come. And so amazingly, it all came together that first year.
We've been talking with Errol Laborde, past president of the Tennessee Williams and New Orleans Literary Festival, whose new book is When Rex Met Zulu and Other Chronicles of the New Orleans Experience. Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. The Silent Book Club meets Friday, March 15th at 6 at Blue Cypress Books. Michelle Ferrette Prather, author of a new book, My Family, A Window into the Secret Successes and Sins of Early New Orleans and Beyond, discusses her work at the meeting of the Genealogical Research Society of New Orleans, Monday, March 18th at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Julia Malley discusses her novel Pelican Girls with M.O. Walsh, Tuesday, March 19th at 6:30 at Garden District Bookshop. Tim Ross discusses and signs Welcome to the Basement, Tuesday, March 19th at Baldwin & Company at 7. Glenn Laborde discusses The Beauty of Southern Vines, Wednesday, March 20th at 10 a.m. at the General Meeting of the Friends of the Jefferson Public Library at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Hamilton Nolan discusses and signs The Hammer, Power, Inequality, and the Struggle for the Soul of Labor, Thursday, March 21st at 6 at Baldwin & Company. Blue Cypress Books host an evening of trivia inspired by the books of Kirsten Renaud, Diana Helmuth, and Michael Allen Zell, Thursday, March 21st at 6:30. The authors will be playing trivia along with the attendees, and each round will center around one of the featured author's newest books. This is a ticketed event. Brad Gooch signs Radiant, The Life and Line of Keith Haring, Friday, March 22nd at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. And it is festival month in March. The New Orleans Book Festival at Tulane wraps up March 15th and 16th. The complete schedule is at bookfest.tulane.edu. Don't miss Family Day, which takes place Saturday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. in the Avron B. Fogelman Arena at the Devlin Fieldhouse. Then, coming up Wednesday, March 20th, the 38th Annual Tennessee Williams and New Orleans Literary Festival gets underway and runs through March 24th. The Fame Shouting Contest is early this year, Sunday, March 17th at 2. Don't miss the tribute reading on the theme of the erotic world of Tennessee Williams Thursday night. There are craft sessions and walking tours and performance events throughout the festival. Check out TennesseeWilliams.net for the complete schedule. Writers coming include Michael Cunningham, Maureen Corrigan, Cynthia Carr, Brad Gooch, Julia Malley, Calm Tobin, Justin Torres, and many others. And don't forget Saints and Sinners, the LGBTQ Literary Festival that runs concurrently that weekend at the Hotel Monteleone. Check out sasfest.org for the complete schedule. And mark your calendars now for these April events. Books Along the Tesh takes place April 5th through 7th in New Iberia. Check out booksalongthetesheliteraryfestival.com for more info. And the Friends of the Jefferson Public Library Big Book Sale is coming up April 12th through 13th. At the Pontchartrain Center in Kenner. Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, with major support from Rouse's Markets. Additional support comes from the Hellis Foundation, the Jefferson Parish Public Library, and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@WWNO.org.